I just have a few more things to finish up. Maybe look at some of the pictures that you gave me and you have shortly. We pretty well covered the people. H.H. Abernathy, that's the name that rings a bell, but I...
Herman Abernathy? Well, Herman is one of our young men in the group. He's a very capable young man. He's a graduate of, I believe, Emory. I think either Emory or University of Georgia. I think it was Emory. And I think he had a master's. He's very competent. He's an aggressive young man and a pretty good chemist. He started out in Jackson Laboratory as a cub, a chemist, got into the polymer work and the latex, neoprene latex, was taken over into our group in the commercialization of latex and worked with old Ben Dales, who was a kind of the godfather of all this chemical, all the latex work in our division. And Herman is still living. Herman is retired. In fact, I'm going to have lunch with him tomorrow. A very capable young man. He did a very good job, I think, for the company. And after I retired, he got more into the commercial side of it. He had a lot to do with the Japanese contract, and spent quite a bit of time in Japan on that. He's a very smart young man.
He's got four very smart children.
Oh, his
children are smart
people. Yes.
Yeah, it seems to be a tendency among some of our colleagues and contemporaries. Well, now we're into retirement and politics, perhaps. This photo of you holding an FDR. I assume that's your retirement party. I assume that's some comment on your
report. Well,
or something.
FDR wasn't held in my highest respect.
I see.
That's made of dimes.
Oh, really?
I used to have a thing, you know, just to carry it along. And I used to say, well, I got a Roosevelt dime, I'd just throw it away. I wouldn't carry it in my pocket. And so they began putting dimes, and they made that FDR out of Roosevelt dimes.
Do you have any kinder feelings now about Roosevelt?
Oh, well, no, of course. Most of that was put on. Just, you know, you get into a thing, you just got to keep it up. And of course, Roosevelt was. Because I was very much annoyed that the bottom of it was the way he treated Mr. Hoover.
Mm-hmm.
I never quite forgive him for that.
Well, I can remember the New Yorker cartoons from the early Roosevelt days.
Yeah.
About the Peter Arnold cartoons, I think. I don't know if you remember some of these.
Yeah.
The Dowagers getting together to go down and hiss Roosevelt, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
This is a picture of somebody with you in your office, and then somebody.
Pete Murawski.
Pete Murawski?
Pete was our salesman in New York.
Oh. Uh-huh.
He was the salesman that called on the electrical trade, mm-hmm. and particularly had a great deal to do. The establishment of neoprene as a coating for secondary wire distribution of electricity.
And here's one of Archie Meese.
That's Archie Meese, who was the manager of our West Coast sales.
Mm-hmm.
And next to him is Stan Ford, who was the production manager for the Organic Chemicals.
Number four.
And there's I, and then John Tinker. And we're on the end there.
Yeah, we've already mentioned
yep.
John. These are two more.
All right. That's Bill.
No, I can see it in my eyes.
Get under them.
Is Bill Askew? He grew up he started at Jackson Laboratory and got into this rubber latex work, and he did quite a world in there working again with old Ben Dales and Herman. He and two worked together, but Bill's a salesman, and he got into sales and did a very excellent job for us. And the other fellow is Bill is Vale Costler, who was in the indirect selling.
Yeah, we have mentioned him before.
Yeah.
Well, this is there's another one, Dorothy.
See a picture of Koss and Bill.
Well, I guess the final. Oh, let's say a little bit about your retirement. You mentioned that earlier, but you said you got involved in.
John Jessup and a group of retirees. He formed a Delaware Citizens Crime Commission, and our objective was to visit the courts. This was authorized by the Supreme Court of Delaware. And from a layman's point of view, visit the courts and report back as to how we felt the courts were being operated. I think two accomplishments that I think we were responsible for the change in the magistrate system, and I think we were responsible for a change in the bail system. We found so many people on bail had been put out in the workhouse and forgotten, been there perhaps a year or more before they were brought to trial. We've established as a result of our work a rotating fund for providing bail so that these people would be, depending upon what they were there for, misdemeanors, things of that sort, they would be put out on bail. See, if a man couldn't provide bail, he was put out there in the slammer, as mm-hmm. they say.
Yeah.
And some fellows were left out there for months, forgotten. And I think those two things we accomplished a great deal. There are other things that we were accomplished that I don't want to talk about, but very, very, did a lot of good work.
And you're active in Masons, of course.
Oh, yes, I was very inactive for many years, and after I retired, I thought I better take advantage of my friendship. Mason meant a great deal to me in the First World War. It really did. And then I was too many busy with many other things. For years, I didn't go into a lodge at all. Then I became a Shriner and got interested in the Shrine work. And as I say, I'm interested in it. I never took any, never had an office in it. Never took any part in any of the. I always enjoyed the nice things about Mason and the friendships that I developed through it. But I never was what you call a good Mason. That is, going to lodge day after day or night after night, or going to. Never took any work in the ritual. But I've always had a nice. Every Monday I go down to Hearn's here with a group of old has-been Shriners, about 20 of us, to have lunch together.
Uh-huh.
Fridays I used to go down to the Masonic Temple. They have a very nice luncheon down there and have very good speakers. I used to go there, but today I can go down on the bus. But I can't walk from the bus terminal, that is from the bus ends at 9th and Shipley, and I can't walk from there over to 8th and Market.
Oh.
It's just too much for me.
So I
don't go. After this stroke, I put my car away, and it's in storage. I'll probably get it out, I hope, in the spring, maybe in the summer I'll be able to ride again, but I don't feel capable of driving now because I don't have enough coordination between my mind and my feet or my mind and my hands.
No.
I'm never sure. If I hit an emergency, I probably wouldn't be able to kick a brake.
Don't they provide a bus or shuttle service here at Fort Minor North?
Yes, they go down once a week. They go downtown once a week to Fairfax, once a week to Bradmore Plaza, once a week up to Concord.
I guess if you feel like it, I'd like some of your comments about the state of the profession, if you like, rubber chemistry or polymer chemistry in general, or polymer technology, let's say. Very radical changes during your life.
Well, it's radical changes. It's a matter of fact, I can't even understand some of the language. Out of it.
I have the same problem.
The organic chemistry that I had, it was very, very primitive beside what we have today. And I would I don't know that I could follow really first year organic chemistry. A lot of it, I'm sure, is way beyond what I ever had in college.
I'm afraid a lot of the introductory chemistry now starts with quantum theory.
I expect it does.
I never had a great deal of use for that.
Well, I just had that as something I heard about, and very little was done with it.
You're really out in the trade or in the business more than in the research.
Yes, I was out in that. The field of technology made two tremendous strides, and I hate to say that war brought these strides on, but I think of the First World War and the great strides in serology, for example, and in medicine. It was a tremendous stride. Then the sulfur drugs came in, a tremendous stride. And then the Second World War came more to the electronics, the computer, the tremendous strides. In both cases, it was due to the effort and the focusing of brains on projects that affected war, yes, but they also have been translated into business and to everyday use. Who ever thought a computer would be on everybody's desk? As for example.
World War II gave DuPont a big boost on the nylon and neoprene.
Absolutely.
I mean, nylon was just barely out when the silk supply.
You know, when I think of it in my own life, I've seen the automobile come and go. I can remember in school, I let the whole school out to go out to the road to see an automobile go by, first automobile go by. I've seen the trolley car, the old come and go. I've seen the automobile start off from the crudest sort of a thing. Matter of fact, I can remember as a boy when there was an old chap there in our town who was a sort of inventor, and he had an upright boiler on an old farm wagon, and he stoked it with charcoal soaked in fuel oil or kerosene, and you have to stop at a watering trough to get water in it, but it would chug along in the parade or something of that sort. There's so many things that I've seen come and go. I've seen the telephone come. The telegraph was there when I was young, of course. I can remember very clearly when the new century came in. Although we lived about 3 miles away from the town, I can remember the church bells ringing at midnight, and the one factory there, they tied the whistle down and let it blow. I remember Halley's Comet, how beautiful it was, going from completely the whole horizon, and so many things I've in my own lifetime have come, many of them have gone, been replaced for the better, usually.
Jim, I noticed you have a Stan Ford picture there too.
Stan Ford,
right.
I haven't heard you mention it.
Yeah. Let me bring this other picture over and see if there's some new people in there.
Okay. Well, the fellow that's standing there is, that's Vic Kossler.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's Vic Kossler. Mm-hmm. And he's a great guy. This fellow was, you know that. So, and Byam, sales manager of Neoprene in the early days. Cabby Bottle, sales manager of Rubber Chemicals. And a real salesman, Ernest Bridgewater here,
right.
Costner here, and I was here.
That looks like this would have been taken back in the early 50s.
Oh, it must have been when they were, I think probably as we'll say at the 25th anniversary of that would be
25, 32, 57
maybe. 57,
uh-huh.
Somewhere along in there,
right.
Or a little earlier. I don't know just when it was done, but it was done as a publicizing Neoprene. These were the five old fellows I said that made to put Neoprene across, commercialized it.
That may be in one of the publications I picked up.
It may well be.
You were talking a little bit about the DuPont company earlier when we were having tea, and I think you might want to make some comments about the changes you've seen in the company itself over the years. You were commenting earlier about how the company took care of employees.
It was before the days of pensions. Just a couple of incidents that I know. We had an old fellow named Johnny Craig that had been an old powder monkey, and he was working with the construction gang over at the Chamber of the Dye Works, and they wanted a screwdriver, piece of pipe, or some tool they didn't have. They asked Johnny to go and get it. Well, in the middle of the bottom of the Depression, one day I saw Johnny on the ferry going back home at night, and Johnny was kind of down at the mouth, and I said, "What's the matter, Johnny?" And he said, in those days, the place was so small, you knew everybody on the plant, really. By the first name, and Johnny says, "You know, Mr. Hayden," he says, "I got laid off." And I said, "You did?" And he said, "Yes, I got laid off. And I feel pretty badly about it. I've worked with the company a good many years." Next morning, he's back on the ferry. He's all kind of smiles. And I said, "What happened to you? I thought you said you got laid off." "Well," he said, "I'll tell you. I went home and got talking. My wife and I was having supper, and I told her I got laid off, how badly I felt about it. And she said, 'Why don't you go and see Peary?'" And he said, "You know, I thought about it." And he said, "I got my son. He had an automobile. So he drove me over to Longwood." And he said, "I went up at the front door, and I rapped on the door." And he said, man came out the door and said, "I wanted to see, it was Mr. Peary at home." And he said, a voice came back, says, "Come on, Johnny, what you doing? What do you want?" And he said, "Mr. Peary brought me in." He said, "What's the matter, Johnny?" He said, "Mr. Peary," I said, "I got laid off today." Now he said, "Johnny, you go back to work tomorrow morning, take your old job up, and if anybody says anything, you tell them to call me."
So
I said, "Well, how'd you know?" He's always said, "Me and Peary always played together as boys over in Hagley Yard when we was kids."
That's right.
But I really cite that as the way they used to look after their people.
Yeah.
They knew the people. They knew the people. They knew their families. They knew, and we were pretty much expected to know our people and their families, and if they were in need, do something about it. We had one man on the dye works whose principal job was, if you knew of something, you just tell him, and very quietly he would be taken care of. That's just an example. Oh, we had another one. I remember I had two old fellows working for me. I'd been given to me to give a job, the old powder monkeys. One day, the young chemist came in to me and said, "No, Horace is getting holding up. He isn't holding his load. Isn't doing the work." He says, "We go out to the." I had him running the storeroom for whatever you need to work with, and he'd fall asleep. So I said, "You come on in. We sit down. I want to talk to you." I said, "You know, there's no pension system." But he says, "Someday you may be old, and you aren't old enough to hold your own job. You'd be damn thankful if you got a job out. You could just come in if you can punch the clock and do some work. Maybe you have to be, you have a, like old people do, fall asleep. What do they call it? Necrolepsy or something of that sort. But old Horace is going to have a job as long as he can come in and push the clock."
It's a bit different now.
Oh, sure it is.
You've seen that. Are you following the papers?
Yes. I know. It's quite different. But there was a certain amount of compassion. You felt you were responsible for the people that you worked for you. And that wasn't unique in my organization. It was unique throughout the company. I'm sure there was a lot of dead wood. Of course, the company was making money, and it was easier.
That may have been part of what was behind it.
But it was
perhaps for the depression thing, really pretty good for him.
But there's an untold number of young men that have been put through college and given an education that was never known by the public. Untold number by individuals, even people on the. You've heard of old Doc Humphrey over at the Chambers work. You ever know him?
The name sounds familiar.
E.C. Humphrey, Basic Colors Superintendent. Mm-hmm. He was a character, and he's a pretty rough character in lots of ways. But many's the boy he's put through college on his own that I know about. And there was a lot of that was done.
Well, the pension plan must have come in when?
I can't tell you when it came in, but.
I can't recall. It was well established when I came on board, of course.
I don't know when he came in, but it wasn't when I came in.
Well, I talked with John Smith, and he had some tapes. He did some tapes of his interviews with her at U, and he was preparing that history of neoprene in 1980.
You have his report?
In fact, I've got a copy. Would you like to have a copy?
I have a copy.
The publication you gave me.
I have it, he gave me one.
But he has never had your tapes transcribed from those earlier interviews that contained a lot of the neoprene sort of thing. If he's willing, would you like to have us transcribe those tapes and maybe include them as part of this?
Go ahead. If you want, it didn't do any good for you.
Well, I mean, they're really your.
I'll never use them.
And your property when we.
Well, I was signed out all over to Hagley.
Yeah, I understand that. What we will do is when we get the transcription and condition for you to look at, well, you have.
Well, I'd be glad to look at it. But, I don't think anybody in my family is a hoot.
Yeah, well.
What I did.
Well, you had a an outstanding career and certainly an interesting story you've told.
Well, I had a lot of fun, put it that way.
I'll be back to see you with the final transcript and some released assignments and so on.
Yeah, okay.
I can't tell you how soon it'll be transcribed, but because it depends on how good they are up there. So this ends this particular interview.